Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Music Business Podcast presented by Hypebot.com. I'm your host, Kyle Balin. Today on the show, we are talking with Farhad Mohit, who is the founder and CEO of Flippagram, an app that allows users to create musical slideshows with photos and videos. We talked to Mohit about Flippagram's meteoric rise and his views on the future of music. Make sure that you subscribe to Music Business Podcast in iTunes or your favorite podcast app. You can also follow the show and get the latest episodes on SoundCloud. And if you like the show, I'd love for you to rate us highly and submit a review in iTunes. Here is our interview with Farhad Mohit.
All right, so let's start by chatting about, you know, the recent announcement that you guys made with this huge raise, and also with the fact that you now have all these great sort of partnerships in music and you're continuing to grow in that space. So when you started, did you have intentions of entering the space, the music space, or did it happen more organically? So did you sort of see more and more users start adding music to their photo slideshows and then realize this is what people want, we should probably secure licenses?
From the get-go, we had the ability for people to add music from their music library to their slideshow. And we obviously were initially focused really on photos. So there was a sequence of photos. So there was really no background music. Now we add video as well. But still, the point was that there was a whole sequence of a video that had no audio track really. And so people, you know, we allowed people to set it to their own music, and they were doing that. Then we realized that most of these videos that are getting created are, you know, our average length is about 30 seconds. Now it was about 24 seconds. It was a little shorter before we added a video. So they were really short in duration, but long enough really to preview a song. If you think about it, it's you know, if it was just a photo, it's too short. If it's a you know, YouTube video, 4.5 minutes, it's a whole song. Neither one of those are really good. But we found ourselves in the Goldilocks position here of having 30 seconds, and we thought that's an ideal length to preview music. And so we just started letting people add music previews, saw that the uptake was amazing on that, and immediately, of course, then reached out to the industry to say, look, this looks like a very incremental use case for your music previews, much better than what you had before. You had your previews behind a gray triangle on iTunes. Now we have them behind people's cherished memories. Isn't that wonderful? Now let's figure out how the licensing works for that now, because obviously we need to license it.
So I think you guys just raised a huge round and there was a lot of press about that, which is great. And I think the usage stats surprised at least me, and I think a lot of other people in music. So Kyle and I really hadn't heard much of Flippagram before the TechCrunch story. And like, we, again, follow the space for a living. So when I sort of talked to a couple other people, they were like, they didn't know what Flippagram was. They hadn't heard of it. And I feel like partly that's because we're not teenagers. So do you think there's a lack of awareness maybe among older people due to the fact that Flippagram appeals to a younger audience?
Yeah, I think it's the adopter type of early adopter situation, and the our core audience right now is our millennials. We have majority under the age of 25, and female, and so they're the ones who are taking the most pictures. They have the most facility with kind of putting together these types of things on an immediate basis. We're building our software, of course, for everyone, but it's the teenagers and slightly older that are using this technology first. What's interesting though is that the Flippagram creators are younger, but the viewers are a little bit older. So what we've seen as a cycle happening, the younger folks are creating these, then the older folks are seeing them, then they want to create it, and slowly as that's happening, our demographics are diversifying, and as well as becoming a little bit more mainstream or older. So I think it's just a normal adoption curve that you're seeing. And yeah, I'm surprised by the number of people. I'm not a teenager either. So
yeah, I mean, so you're not a teenager. So how did you sort of come to then create this product that got massive pickup among a younger audience and seems, at least to me, sort of created for a younger audience?
Well, we the idea here was that everyone is taking too many pictures, and then that a picture is worth 1,000 words. So the thing that clicked in sort of our heads was that, hey, stringing a bunch of pictures together is a much easier way to tell a narrative or create a little story than anything else. And by the way, all of us go to a party or, you know, some event. We don't just take one picture. We take a bunch of them. So what's a cool way to tell a story about the party you were at or the birthday or whatever? It's a great way to string all of these now with videos as well into a sequence and put it together. It was really about how a much easier and better way to create narrative. So the adult terminology for it, create narrative, much easier than blogging, if you would, or than creating a full-fledged YouTube video, which is very difficult. Both of those are kind of difficult tasks, actually. As amazing as they are as technologies, they're kind of difficult. Blogging requires you to be literate and know how to write, and people have to read it. A video takes a lot of effort to cut a few minutes of video from longer sessions, like an hour of footage, cut it down into a couple of minutes. So we found that we saw this was a very easy way to create narrative. And as we did that, the first people to jump on it are the people who are on all day, using pictures to communicate anyways. I think Snapchat has done a similar thing. They noticed that a picture is worth 1,000 words. So a snap is much easier to convey a feeling of what's happening than chatting. So it's a similar kind of a philosophy. They're sharing moments, we're sharing narrative.
Yeah, it's so fascinating to me, the sort of evolution of photo sharing and what you guys are doing, because I grew up in the 80s, and the sort of cultural narrative in the 80s was that looking at someone else's photos was boring. Like, it was sort of right. The joke of like, oh, we have to go look at their vacation slideshow. Like, oh my God, what a terrible waste of time. Right. And now that's all people do. Like, I personally spend a lot of time on Instagram, and I follow, I'm looking at pictures of people's dogs and people's breakfasts and their vacations. And for some reason, it's incredibly compelling to me. And so it's just sort of interesting to think about this shift where consuming other people's photos has really, in a generation, gone from something that was sort of like, oh, I have to go like look at my grandma's vacation photos, to like, oh, wow, I'm going to look at a million people's random photos, and somehow that's an engaging experience.
Well, I think what happens here is there's a curation element that's going on, where before, you had these photos that would have to be developed on film. So you take like 12 shots and that was your whole roll, and all of them were standard. Like, of course you have to have the one, everyone standing in a row by grandma's, house and whatever. So they're kind of boring, honestly. You didn't have the flexibility to keep shooting a bunch of pictures and then pick out the good ones. And that's, I think, what's happening now, is that people, because of the digital photography thing and because these smartphones have such great cameras, people can take basically photographs all day long. And then that, then they can curate the subset that is interesting, selfie generation, they take the one shot that looks great out of 20,000 times that they tried it, right? So they take the best of the best, and then we allow you another form of curation, which is now sequencing a bunch of these together in a row, and then, of course, setting it to music, which makes it all just that much more interesting and fun. So I think it's about how many pictures are being taken and what types of stories are now being able to be told, versus in the 80s where it was just stand in a line, buy the birthday cake, take a picture. That's kind of boring.
Yeah, I guess it's also, for me, the fact that I can look at photos of cultures from anywhere around the world, whereas in the 80s, looking at, oh, my grandma took a trip to Japan, it's still like my grandma, doing right. The things that grandmas do in Japan. Whereas now it's like, oh, here's this random kid who lives in Saudi Arabia, or who lives in South Africa, or who lives in Finland. And here's, like, I find their day-to-day life fascinating, because for me, it's a way to see what a normal day looks like in any culture anywhere that I wouldn't have ever had access to. So do you think that's a part of
Absolutely.
Our ability
actually,
is just
actually,
see more
actually,
interesting stuff?
One of the things you might ask yourself, like, so these are, we have, Sequoia and Kleiner Perkins and, Mike Moritz and John Doerr jumping on our board. What were they excited about? I think what our investors got excited about was similar to what we got so excited about in seeing this evolution from, if you think about other forms of narrative writing, blogging, and video. Well, look at blogging. Writing has been the primary form of like telling a story for many, many years. The problem with that is that if you're from another culture and you write in that, language, nobody can understand it other than people from that culture or that language. We have right now, you know, Kurdish rebels in Kurdistan, which isn't a country that doesn't even exist. It's between Iraq, Iran, and Turkey. And they're in the mountainside creating flippograms with pictures, video, and music. And you look at it and you're seeing a whole, like you said, a whole glimpse into the life of a Kurdish rebel. I had no idea that they hunt with hawks, and of course they all carry guns, but they also drink from the streams directly. It's a very interesting thing to have a peek into the world. And so these audio-visual stories are amazing because they transcend language and borders, and they're directly from the people's it's sort of a democratization of storytelling in some sense. It's directly from the participants' lives. It's not mediated by, you know, it's not Vice News going out there and telling me what the Kurdish rebels look like, because that's one angle, right? It's the Kurdish rebels themselves telling me how their life is, which is very incredibly interesting. And not that all of our content is that riveting. There's a lot of people taking selfies and fun stuff as well, as you'd expect. But there's a lot of that aspect to it as well.
But I feel like the selfie stuff is even, to me, more sort of normalizing than, you know, hunting with a hawk. Like, okay, that's cool, and I'm glad I get to see that. But at the end of the day, that's still a very exotic thing to me as someone who like lives in New York and gets all my food from a bodega or from Seamless. But if it's like someone in Kurdistan, like taking a selfie with their friends, like that to me is super familiar. Like that's something that I'm like, oh, you're hanging out with your friends, you make goofy faces and you take a selfie. That's become this very sort of universal language. And I feel like that's what's really interesting is kids are now seeing like, oh, this person who I've been told my entire life is quote unquote different. Yeah, they're just the same as me. They're just goofing off taking selfies.
100%. So when we talk about, having, you know, an unmediated experience, it's not just about their exotic life being strange and different. That's absolutely right. But you're absolutely right. The fact that they're doing many of the same things, when they're smiling and running around, you kind of get the feeling of joy as well. And then another incredibly powerful point on that, which brings us sort of to the music, is that, you know, these Kurdish rebels are using NSYNC or Billy Ocean on some of their tracks, you know, and you're like, oh my God, like they like Billy Ocean out there. It's like, that's amazing. And music is also has that incredible power to transcend borders. That's why these musicians, you know, are popular worldwide, right? Everybody loves Pink Floyd, and everybody loves, you know, One Direction. You know, there's people all over the world who love them. So it's by using that the music to underscore your story, even if you're, you know, seemingly in a different place, you kind of join at that juncture of like, oh, you love that music too. We love that music too. Wow, that's amazing. You know?
Yeah. So let's kind of talk about some of the music stuff. So who were some of the first mover artists on the app in terms of like the first artists to use it? I know that you've done stuff now with like Pitbull and some other artists, but were there artists that you saw who just kind of picked it up and were like, oh, I'm going to play with this and check it out?
So when we launched in the free app store was around November of 2013, and we were strictly a creation app. We didn't have a network or any of the other types of things that you see right now on the app. People would just come in. You didn't have to even register. You just would create and place it into your social media feeds or into your email or SMS or whatever you wanted to do with it. And even at that time, you know, we experienced an incredibly fast growth. At December of 2013, I think we hit number one in about 87 countries. So about less than 2 months after we launched, we just skyrocketed into everywhere. And it was a New Year's Eve, I remember, because everybody was doing these flippogram recaps of their year, and it just that idea just went viral. But over there, everybody started using. I mean, we had Justin Timberlake making one, Beyonce making one. They weren't registered on our platform, of course, but they were making them. Then early in the year 2013, we had we noticed that One Direction actually. I don't exactly remember when it was. I think it was around February or March. It was Harry Styles' birthday, and One Direction decided to run a flippogram contest. And we were just shocked because they were on Twitter telling their fans, "Hey, it's Harry Styles' birthday. make a flipogram for Harry, you know, and we thought, wow, this is incredible. And you know, it will, you know, probably, you know, obviously the reason why probably is that, you know, they have many, many more fans, obviously, on other networks. We didn't even have a network at the time. But every time you create a flipogram for Harry Styles, I would assume that you would use, if you're a good directioner, you would use a One Direction song. And then of course, there's links to buy that or stream it on Spotify that would always go with that track. So they had actually 5 million flipograms created for A Story of My Life, the story of my life, that song from theirs, because that was a perfect intersection of the band kind of promoting this use case of telling their fans to create with their music. A song being perfect because we're a storytelling app and this is a story of my life. And the demographics are, of course, the younger teens and girls. Directioner fans are probably predominantly in that category. And so that was amazing to see. To see people like that. Britney Spears was very early on in the network side of things. We had one of her dancers who was really early on, and I think her dancer turned on Britney Spears to it. Becky G was on early. Maroon 5 was on early, and then as the network came together, Fifth Harmony's been very active on our network as sort of one of our first verified artists, and they're doing really cool stuff with that. But they're just right now. I mean, honestly, like as we announced these deals, we one of the things we just had it all hands on is like, how do we deal with the influx of all these? We have 500 artists waiting to be verified, and these are people like you would love to work with. It's just that we're having some capacity issues right now of just onboarding these folks and handling them. So it's a good problem to have right now.
Yeah, absolutely. What types of music are most popular in the app? I mean, you're talking about a lot of pop artists, obviously, and I would imagine given the demographic, pop is pretty huge, but are there other genres that you see being pretty big and anything that surprised you, like, you know, certain artists or certain genres you wouldn't think would be that popular that people really love?
Yeah, in addition to pop is popular. I mean, pop is it's called popular music, right? Popular for a reason. You know, it's not my favorite music, but it is pop, you know? And we have actually hip-hop that's incredibly popular as well. If you look at our top 50, a bunch of the top artists are hip-hop artists. EDM is getting big. Country music, actually, what was surprising to me is how big country music is and how quickly country musicians have kind of flocked onto the platform. I would have expected them to be more country rather than rural rather than urban, but they're on top of this trend, which is surprising to me. We had for instance Garth Brooks join early on, and Garth is one of those that you wouldn't think about as front leading in the digital area. He doesn't sell his music on even iTunes right now, my understanding.
Yeah, no, he doesn't sell any music digitally, but it's interesting because everyone seems to write country off as a genre in the digital space. And yet in every experience that I've had, all the startups I've worked with, all the people that I've talked to, country artists, when you pay attention to them, tend to be hugely popular and really into it. And their fans are super, super crazy about them.
Yeah,
like,
we are the most devoted
fans.
You're absolutely on it, and what's cool about our network in some sense is that we're sort of that, and that's why we want to have all the music on there, is that we're sort of an organic discovery platform. So the fact that we didn't know about country necessarily, or I don't listen to country, doesn't mean that country didn't know about us, and as they came along, we weren't able to support them. So we have, you know, even Tim McGraw is one of the best examples of an artist right now using our flipogram to promote his tour and his music, and even small artists like Cam, who you may or may not have heard of, they jumped right on board. In fact, Cam came to our offices with her manager and did a little show for the flipogram team because she was so excited about starting to trend on flipogram and having her fans create with this stuff. So yeah, that country has been big for us, and it's a good it's good. We're excited about that. I particularly like the long tail. I think it's amazing to see all these. Even an artist has 1,000 fans, we can help 100 of them create, stories, share stories of their life with that artist's music. That means that that's 100 people that are going to share it with 100 people. That's 10,000 more people who get exposed to it. And now suddenly the artist has another few thousand fans, and then they can, you know, continue to push that forward. So it's because we allow the artists to connect with their fans using the fan stories and the artist's music. It's a very, very sort of a self-fulfilling loop for those artists to jump on board, because they can just work with their existing fan base to create more fans, which is awesome.
So are there any artists so far, and again, this might be a little early, but, you know, are there any artists so far that have been surfaced because people are using their music on Flipagram? Like, could Flipagram become a place to discover a new artist? Like, if there's someone who writes a particularly catchy song, or, like, I don't know, you write a song about, like, the prom or graduation or back to, you know, going back to school or, like, what, absolutely, going to college. Like, I could see someone writing, like, that type of a song and just blowing up on Flipagram, because if it's absolutely a song, right, that's, like, about a, yep, specific moment that so many people experience, people are going to start using it.
Yeah, we're seeing that happen. We're seeing small artists that are jumping on and push, you know, sort of really using the platform well, getting a big audience relative to what they have. We've even had some record executives come down here and ask us if there's ways that they can tap into our data in a different way so that they can discover. So that I think it's not, the industry also recognizes that this is a pretty organic way to see what could be trending for a certain type of use case and demographic. So yeah, absolutely, that's happening, and I think that's exactly the open. We haven't. I'm waiting for it, but, like, we have exactly best friends. We have storytelling. We have birthdays. We have events of various kinds, like prom and other things. And each of these could have very, very Flipagram friendly songs soon. And I think the idea here is, if your friends and if you have something that lots of people can tell a story with, then that's going to get carried far and wide. And as it gets carried far and wide, everyone's going to start to see it and understand it, and not only that, be able to use it. And of course, they want to listen to the full track as well. So it has that loop for it. So we're seeing a lot of that happening, especially given the age of the platform itself.
So do you find that people generally are interested more in creating their own slideshows and adding music to them? Or do you get a lot of people that come on and just want to consume other slideshows or consume slideshows by artists, or how does that sort of break down?
So we started out as a creator app, as I told you. And so we have an incredible number of creators. I mean, you know, the stat that we released was that in Q1, we had about 14 million plus creations, new Flipagrams created each month for the first quarter of the year. We're well ahead of that number now. And if you put that number in context, you know, you have number of creations. There's a stat that YouTube publishes that they say that they have 300 hours of video uploaded to their servers every minute. Their videos are about 4.5 minutes long, according to ComScore. So if you do the math, YouTube has about 170 million videos created a month. We have about 14 million on our platform. That's about 8% the number of creations on Flipagram as on YouTube in 1 year, so a little over 1 year here. And so when you think about that, that's an incredible number of creations that are happening on our app. So that's that part. We've launched the network side of things earlier in the year. Really, the second quarter is when it started to have become a full-fledged network, like with channels and following and social and liking and things like that. So for us, that part is sort of lagging the creation part, but we are seeing an incredible spike in the number of people viewing and the amount of time they're spending viewing. It's up to us, though. I think frankly, if I say one of our challenges is, out of that 14 million videos, which ones should we be surfacing for everyone else? You know, which ones are general use and which ones are actually people telling their story to their friends and family and not really relevant to everyone else? So we have to find, I'm telling the guys that out of the team that after, you know, out of the 14 million, there's, you know, 140,000 that are going to be great and 1,400 that are going to be just knock your socks off. But how do you find those needles in the haystack to put in front of everyone? That's the challenge, actually, that we're working with right now.
And what are some of the most creative uses you've seen in the music space? Either, you know, I mean, it could be some stuff that someone else has created, but I'm thinking more specifically artists that you've worked with. You know, is there anyone who's done something that you think is really incredible?
Delwin is doing really awesome stuff. And I'm not sure if I'm saying his name right, Darwin or Delwin, the artist. Do you know Delwin?
No, I don't.
Okay, yeah. So he's, let me see, where is he on our list here? He's number 25 right now on our Flipagram list. So I can send send the link to you. But if you look at him, he's making incredible. He has a song called Dessert. What you gonna do with that dessert? Have you heard that song?
Yeah. Okay. I know that song. Yeah.
Okay. So that's a really funny song to begin with, and we have him creating incredibly funny videos of kids and people that, you know, dancing to the beat of that song that are just hilarious, getting millions of views. And then he's also interacting with his fans by being tongue in cheek with not just that song and inviting them to create with that, and lots of fans are creating with that, but also sort of, you know, he's doing fun things like, you know, he, I guess his look doesn't change very often, so he did a flipogram of just pictures, you know, of him flip and saying, which one do you think was from 5 years ago? And they all look identical, you know. There's that kind of stuff. There's really creative. So he's doing really, really awesome stuff like that. There's people like Pharrell, who Pharrell is doing his My Freedom, his latest song, and he wants his fans to express what their freedom is, and so he has a hashtag called hashtag My Freedom, and he's encouraging all his fans to tell the world what their freedom is in a flipogram. And of course, you know, of course, they're if they're polite, they're going to use his song to do that. And so tons of them are doing that. And that's an awesome thing. And then it's not creative use, but it's unique, certainly to our platform. We allow the verified artists to be just like users on our app, except that we note, if a verified artist comes in and likes a fan creation or reflips a fan creation or comments on a fan creation that has their music, we badge that on the creation and we let the user know. So it's like Fifth Harmony liked your flipogram, you know? And so that's an incredible use of the platform and connecting artists to fans. And lots of artists are taking advantage of that. Pharrell is doing that. Tim McGraw is doing that. The Win, of course, is doing that. And Travis Mills is doing that. Andy Grammer is doing that. They're coming in and basically looking at the fan creations that have been made with their music, seeing which types of use cases or which examples they like. They like those. Or reflip those, and then their fans get that little, it's like we call it an artist autograph. They get the autograph on their story, and then all the other fans get to see that. Wow, these artists are actually interacting with stories from our lives, and maybe they'll like my story too. It's much better than follow me, which is what you get on most of the other comments. Anytime an artist puts something out, you know, all the comments there on other networks are just follow me. But, you know, the follow me is a weak kind of endorsement to say that the artist likes you. But if the artist actually likes your story about, you know, how you interpreted their song or how you put their song into your life, that's a pretty meaningful connection. And lots of artists are doing that as well.
So I wrote a piece a couple of weeks ago about you guys right after the raise, and it was mostly about the future of music apps looking more like Flipagram, which is an app that uses music, instead of what we have now, which is a lot of quote-unquote music apps look like Spotify, and that's a place that you go and specifically listen to music. Like, you don't do much else in Spotify other than listen to music.
Right.
Whereas Flipagram, you do a lot of other things, and music is part of it. So
right.
I really feel like one day every app will be a music app, and the idea that there is such a thing as a music app will sort of go away. I mean, do you think that's something that's going to happen, or do you think we're always going to have apps where people just go listen to music, or will music just get baked into every app?
I think it's important. I think that there's obviously many places where music can be part of the experience and enhance the experience. Ours is one really clear example of this. When you want to tell a story, a video story at the end of it, audio, you know, photo video story, it becomes like a little movie. And any movie kind of needs a soundtrack, and the soundtrack is the music, right? So that in that situation, it makes perfect sense. But I don't think. See, if you want to actually, for instance, I experience music, you know, when I'm, you know, thinking, you know, I'm coding or I'm writing something. I like to have music playing. I like to have music when I'm driving, when I'm jogging, when I'm, you know, doing many things. I wouldn't want to. That's not going to go away. That's a very major. So if I want music to be part of my present. It's not likely to be in an app format that is not going to consume the whole song, right? So it's Spotify and things like that, or when music is going to be part of your present, that's the type of app you want. And your present, you can't be distracted into the app itself, right? So I want it to be part of my day, Spotify, but I don't want it to be like dominating my entire audiovisual core, you know, brain, everything. I want to still be, you know, doing some other things. And that's a very powerful use case of music, which is kind of giving context, ambiance to your present, your real life. In that context, I don't see Spotify and those guys going away. I see them just becoming stronger. In the context of telling a story, as an example, or many other use cases like video games or other kinds of things, I think you're going to see more and more, you know, music start to come into this thing. And in our use case, it's such a powerful promotional tool for the music underlying it, because when people are telling their stories, the music that accompanies that story, everyone who gets the story from a kid, you know, let's say everyone I share my story with is my daughter taking her first steps. I send it to my friends and family. They're incredibly engaged in that story, and then whatever music I've chosen to accompany that, they're going to be in a pleasant state of mind and are likely to be influenced to like that music as well. So it's sort of like a customized promotion for that music and millions of them happening. So that's going to keep getting, I think, done more and more. But I don't think it means that things like Spotify go away, because I don't think my app, certainly I wouldn't recommend anybody trying to create a flippogram or consume a flippogram while they're driving. You know what I'm saying? So.
I have actually seen people edit Instagram videos while driving, and
no, yeah, good.
don't do it. Don't flippogram and drive, kids. I think I actually put that in the article. I was like, do not flippogram and drive.
Don't flip and drive. Yeah, don't flip and drive.
Exactly. That's the next generation PSA that we're going to see. So you guys have had, obviously, an amazing 2015 so far. What does the rest of the year and the next, say, 6 months look like for you guys in terms of, you know, you're based in LA, are you expanding to different cities? Are you expanding internationally? What are sort of the things that you're going to be working on?
Yeah, we have an incredibly large number of music artists. We think, I mean, if you think about what's happened with Flippogram, is we have this incredible storytelling platform. The length is exactly the right length for music to be previewed, and then we allow people to purchase, and it's an incredible platform for fans to create and for artists to interact with those fans and encourage creation, and each of these creations is a promotion. So in many ways, if you think about Flippogram versus the other networks, we're the first fully licensed social use case for music, and it's very clear from the early reception that it's a better mousetrap, if you would, for artists. I mean, artists and musical artists are the most influential people on earth. If you look at how many followers and fans they have on all the other social networks, they're better than politicians, they're better than brands, they're better than celebrities in terms of the number. Now, imagine all of those people, especially through these deals, now notice that there's a better place to bring all their fans, and we're encouraging them too. We say, bring all your fans. You know, you have a million fans on Twitter. What are they doing for you there? Bring them to Flippogram, and you know, tens of thousands of them will start creating Flippograms for you. And so, you know, that statement is now out there. People like Pharrell and Tim McGraw and Fifth Harmony and others are doing it, and others are watching, and their labels are telling them, you know, hey, this is an amazing opportunity. And so the whole rest of this year is really going to be tying up that music artist fan loop and bringing on as many of these musical artists and their fans as possible. And then we, you know, our feeling is, of course, is as the music artists bring their fans not only will tell a musical story about one artist, but they also have then other stories to tell. And that'll just get the flywheel, accelerate that flywheel and keep it going. So that's a pretty incredibly large, you know, thing to try to accomplish. And when you put it on an international scale, which is exactly what our music licenses are, they're global. You see that it's probably beyond the next 6 months. It's just a massive undertaking for us at the moment.
Yeah. And are you guys based solely in LA, or are you starting to expand to other cities as well in terms of your office space?
Our headquarters is in LA. We have one or two folks that are remote, but for the time being, we have most things in LA. We may start to have folks, you know, in various countries that we're big in, and so that we can have a better sort of local team. But it's primarily all development is going to be out of Los Angeles, and we're mostly still sort of a technology and development company at the moment.
Interesting. And what are your biggest markets? I don't know if you know that off the top of your head, but I would assume, you know, U.S. being one. But if there were any that sort of surprised you, for instance.
Yeah, I mean, what actually surprised me, our top five are the U.S., Brazil, United Kingdom, Japan, and Mexico. So if you think about, you look at U.S., Mexico, and Brazil, that's like the north-south Central American axis, and then you look at U.K., that's the Europe starting, and Japan, that's the east. And then when you look in the top 10, what's surprising is like Turkey's in the top 10. Saudi Arabia flirts with being in the top 10, even though it's quite a small country. And then we have a bunch of European countries there. We have Indonesia in there. So it's truly, you know, a global phenomenon. And, you know, internally we say, you know, everyone has a story worth telling. And we help anyone with a cell phone be able to do that with a smartphone. And there's 5.2 billion of these things across the world. So we expect the world, you know, the international market to continue to be bigger and bigger. Of course, U.S. is by far our biggest so far, but that's because we started out here. But it's amazing that how many different countries. You know, I'm Iranian. Iran is number 25. It's surprising to me. So that Iran is charting for us in terms of users. But it's, you know, they have stories to tell.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because I actually just finished writing a piece about Saudi Arabian musicians and how they've, you know, gone from having no outlets, like literally no outlets, they couldn't even play live in their own country, to, you know, some of them building pretty huge followings on SoundCloud and YouTube.
Absolutely,
and,
right.
You know, I think that's what's been most interesting about platforms like this that are truly open and truly global is it's a little bit about what we talked about earlier. You know, everyone wants to put cute selfies on the internet.
Right.
I mean, that is a truly global phenomenon is if you're a teenager, no matter where you are, you want to hang out with your friends, you want to document it, you want to have fun. Like,
yeah.
You know, it's 100% kind of incredible. And it's,
I mean, we're talking some Middle Eastern music outlets as well about connecting their artists with their fans. So it's like, you know, over there they have less, in many ways, less ability to interact with the artists directly. Some of the countries, they don't like to have these types of, they don't have the same freedoms as we do. So to be able to connect with these artists online, to be able to have the artists like your Flippogram or something, your endorse your life, if you would, to be able to show that you know behind closed doors you have an incredibly rich and vibrant life just like everybody else does, even though in the outside you may not be able to show it as much. These are incredibly exciting times to be working in, and it's an incredible sort of a object we have, the Flippogram, to help people express themselves in that way and connect in these ways. So it's I'm Middle Eastern myself, so for me it's particularly exciting to see those use cases emerge as well. It's really something that makes me so happy about the world. So,
yeah, no, it's incredible. I mean, it's, you know, I think that's, it's funny because the one thing that I saw a lot when I think Twitter came out and then also Instagram came out, and you know, the sort of older generation would all sort of say the same thing about these social sharing platforms, which is basically, these are dumb. Who wants to see pictures of someone else's brunch or someone else's selfie? You know,
right.
This is like silly and narcissistic. And I mean, listen, like I've seen enough brunch Instagrams to be like, okay, I'm sick of the brunch Instagram. Stop taking pictures of your food. But there's also something really normalizing about it, which is, you know, if you are taught to dislike another culture and then you sort of look at their mundane, like, brunch Instagrams, then you're like, oh, these people aren't that different. Like, they eat brunch and hang out and
do stuff just like we do.
So how can they actually be that bad if they're like taking annoying brunch Instagrams just like me?
Exactly. And when you have a storytelling platform, which is sort of what ours does, is a narrative platform, if there's, you know, the narratives that millions of actual people have to tell are so much richer and more interesting than the couple or three narratives that our politicians and our mainstream media kind of feeds us every day. So if you're talking about a storyline, I'd much rather pay attention to the millions of different kinds of creative people out there that are telling the storylines from, you know, of people. Not only does it normalize, as you say, but it's just more interesting and diverse. There's so many, you know, on our platform, I would encourage you to go check out a guy called Hector Alejandro if you really want to see. He has like crazy Legomation, your village people meets Britney Spears doing line dancing. I mean, he has such crazy creativity and stories that are coming out that doesn't even have a place in mainstream sort of media and the 1 or 2 or 10 or 100 channel universe that we have, all of them repeating the same nonsense about the other people. You know, I feel like the democratization of storytelling is so important for bringing people closer together and being able to, you know, bust past these sort of these mainstream narratives that aren't, you know, that at the end of the day they're sort of self-serving, you know, in some sense. They're not yeah. helping humanity.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us today. I really appreciate you taking time out of your incredibly busy schedule. If people want to find you on the internet, where can they find you?
Me or Flipagram?
Both.
Flipagram, of course, is flipagram.com, or you can have at Flipagram on any of the social networks. I'm Farhad. You can find me at Farhad667 on Twitter or Farhad at Flipagram/Farhad.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much and have a great day.
Thank you so much. You too.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That's all for this episode of the Music Business Podcast. Thank you to Hypebot for helping us put this show out. If you have any questions, comments, or feedback, please send me an email at kyle.bylin@gmail.com. That's kyle.bylin@gmail.com. I'd love to hear from you. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed today's discussion.